time slot of Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm very happy to be going to this earlier time slot. I'll be more happier, so watch out, Mother Truckers. So remember to tune in to me, Beelzebub, and Wham to get your paranormal groove on. Can you dig it? Bringing you original guests, not regurgitated guests. So tune in and drop out. Be there or be a dork square. We'll see you on Friday nights. And yeah, this is a Stanford Sun song. So that's how we get our groove on, baby.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
In a town where belief in aliens is the local currency, one man calls shenanigans. Tuning in, friends. You're listening to Area 51.fm. I'm Guy Malone, reporting from Roswell with all the news that's fit to retract. My opening music tonight was from a little ditty called Silver Machine by English space rockers Hawkwind. It was released way back in 1972 when I was just a wee lad. Do yourself a huge favor and go listen to that in its entirety on YouTube from the link that I posted. It is quite a trip to listen to. It's a fun song. Now, whether I was literally taken on board a silver machine, a time or three, or not, at that tender 1972 age of 4 years old, can be judged by you by reading my personal testimony and stories of repeated, quote, visitations in my book, Come Sail Away With Me. It is online for you to read for free. It's available in hard copy from Amazon, and or it's available signed by me via PayPal, with a few extra goodies tossed your way when you order direct from me for a signed copy. See the very bottom of www.area51.fm. for more details on how to get a copy of my book in your very own hands. I'm kind of into a whole new kind of silver machine anyways these days, as you surely know by now. Just following up on something I mentioned last week, yes, my affiliate is still running their sale on small fractional silver rounds, those smaller than a full ounce of silver, that is. I just ordered a roll of dimes myself. Well, not dimes, really, but a roll of 50 one-tenth of an ounce pieces of silver for a regular customer that comes to see me at the Area51.fm studio here in Roswell. You, too, can come see me most weekends in Roswell yourself, if you like, whether to pick up a signed book of mine, get some silver, or just some coffee and maybe a few minutes of conversation with yours truly. The Area51.fm studio is located here in Roswell, New Mexico, inside Blair's Monterey Flea Market, 1400 West 2nd, also known as Sunset and 2nd. If you live here, just turn in where you would for Salmon's, or the Red Onion Restaurant, the skating rink, that plaza. The flea market itself is open 9 to 5, 6 days a week, closed on Wednesdays, and I'm here usually on Fridays and Saturdays at minimum, and kind of hit or miss throughout the rest of the week. Calling or emailing to let me know you're coming and making sure nothing is pulling me away is recommended if you're making a special trip, that is. And I'll be all too happy to sell you one or a few of these smaller one-tenth ounce silver rounds at a kind of jacked up price, of course. Or like I said, my affiliate is running a sale where you can get a roll of them for just 59 cents over spot right now. Area51.fm, and you'll see the link to my silver affiliate supplier. It's Friday, April 8th, 2016, in our little corner of the world, by the way. And speaking of retracting, well-known and quite prolific UFO author Nick Redfern published a blog post a couple of days ago stating that he no longer believes in what is known as the, quote, extraterrestrial hypothesis, as it's referenced in the UFO research community. Or putting it more simply for the rest of us Earthlings, Nick does not believe that authentic aliens from other planets are what's actually behind UFO and contactee and abductee reports. He's joining us on the telephone very shortly to open up and tell us why his view has so radically changed after 30 years plus of research and maybe a dozen published books from him on all things UFO. After Nick, we're also going to get to hear from Dr. Michael Heiser today, another published UFO author, in reference to the time he got good and retracted from the History Channel special, UFOs in the Bible. Many of you know Dr. Heiser from his half a dozen or so times speaking here in Roswell at our Ancient of Days UFO and abduction conferences, maybe from his published works and his many, many appearances over the years with hosts Art Bell, George Nuri, Ian Punnett, and maybe one or two more others on the whole Coast to Coast AM program. Now, the story I'm referencing is old, old news, actually. But Mike sort of refound an older article he'd written, something of a rebuke, really. He wrote this over a decade ago after he was filmed for this History Channel program, but then he got left out for not going along with what he said was the program's flawed premise. He reposted that article just this week, and boy, it is making the rounds and getting lots of traffic. Mike is just going to come on and recap that adventure tonight. It'll be good to hear his voice again, actually. So, why would the History Channel pay to fly in, film for 2 hours, and then completely cut out the only degreed ancient text scholar they even interviewed for their program, UFOs in the Bible, known nowadays as the precursor to the Ancient Aliens series they've been milking for years? Well, keep listening, my friends, for that fun, fun trip down memory lane with Dr. Heiser. But first up, some local news for you, as usual. Can't really call my program Reporting from Roswell without covering these goodies. You know what I'm saying. Maestro John Farrar has returned this week to conduct the Roswell Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night, Saturday, April 9th, that is, for the final show of this year's season, live at NMMI's Pearson Auditorium. Performing with him tomorrow night only is the famed Taiwanese global sensation, pianist and poet Tian Shai. some kind words from the Pacifica Tribune I found on her artist page. Serious, composed, tiny, and full of music, Tian Shai lets her artistry on the piano express a warmth and freshness of ideas that surely none but a poet could explain. One night only, and it is the symphony's last performance of their season. But I did obtain a verbal commitment, by the way, from Maestro Ferrar just this week when I saw him, to join us right here on Area 51 to share his plans and to set up next season for us when he returns to Roswell in a few months. Also on your Roz Guide events calendar, something you're going to want to go ahead and snap up tickets for now, while you still can, The Little Mermaid debuts next weekend at Eastern New Mexico University's Performing Arts Center. Folks, I'm seeing quite a bit of excitement surrounding this event, and for a variety of reasons, actually. And while there are six times to catch this over the next two weekends, I'm just saying, you may or may not be able to just walk in and buy tickets if you wait until the day of. I have no personal or financial interest in telling you this, by the way. Just a heads up that by my personal estimation, this is going to be a really, really popular performance. By the time word of mouth gets to you from people who have seen it, it might just be too late for you to get your own tickets. Showtimes and advanced ticketing information are yours for the taking right now, though, from www.area51.fm, my local events calendar at the top of the page. While you're there, check in on the dates in May for the Roswell Community Little Theater's performance of Sherlock Holmes, The Final Adventure. And if you could use a little help planning your trip to Roswell for any of these events, then I am your Roz Guide, ready, willing, and able to help you out with event ticketing, choosing your hotel, good places to eat, things like that. With all the talent we have here these days locally, plus with whatever's touring through here, there's lots of reasons for you to make that day trip or for you to finally spend the weekend here in Roswell, and I want to help make it really easy for you to do so. And finally, Southeast New Mexico's largest garage sale is happening April 23rd, all day long at the soccer complex right next to the Wool Bowl here. Roswell United does this twice a year to benefit the Humane Society by selling little covered boots to you for just around $20 or $30, depending, so you can help out the cause by cleaning out your house and making some extra cash for yourself. It's the Roswell Community Yard Sale, Saturday, April 23rd. There's no admission, no charge for parking either. Just get there early, as it starts at 6 a.m. if you want to shop. Now, personally, I'm more likely to still be up at 6 a.m. myself than to actually show up anywhere, so you probably won't catch me there that early, but that's when to go to get some deals, I hear. And again, if you're a vendor, $20-$30, they don't take any percentage of your sales, they don't ask how much you made. It's an opportunity for you to help out the Humane Society and yourself financially. Two things you'll definitely want to know about if you're driving around Roswell for these events, by the way. Some road construction has begun on about a one-mile stretch of North Main Street, so there's going to be workers present, and only when absolutely necessary, the occasional reduction to one lane only both ways, according to the Roswell Daily Record article that I've linked to you for if you want to see those details. But also, number two, don't speed when you're in Roswell. RDRnews.com also brought us a report this week that police have proposed an increase in the cost of traffic tickets. According to the April 4th article published that you can still view on the Roswell Daily Record's website, city leaders have studied the topic and found that Roswell's traffic fines are fairly lower than those of surrounding area courts. And hey, that needs to change. Stat. I'm not exactly quoting the article with that part there, by the way. But for example, your basic speeding ticket for being 1 to 10 miles over the speed limit is currently only $44. The new proposal would send that fine to a fairly reasonable, I feel, fine of $75. But wait, there's lots more. If you're really speeding, like recklessly driving kind of speeding, you will see an increase of anywhere from 1 to 2 to over $300 more than the already existing fines. Thank you, Roswell Daily Record, for the heads up on that. I've got the article with the whole list of proposed fine increases linked for you. And it's not only about speeding tickets, mind you. The fine increases are possibly all the way across the board for everything from illegal U-turns to improper child restraint devices, etc., etc., etc. Our local police have been making headlines also this week, both in good ways and maybe not so much. I know you sure could use a little good news today, right? RDRnews.com reported on April 6th that two Roswell PD officers, Scott Aldani and Ashley Wood, God bless them, responding to a 911 call for help from a couple who noticed an injured man in a parking lot and performing CPR perhaps just in time, successfully revived a 60-year-old man who, when officers arrived, quoting the article, quote, found the injured man unresponsive and without a pulse. It also appeared that the man was not breathing, unquote. God bless those officers, seriously. In light of us having two guests coming up that we want to hear from, I'm going to kind of gloss over what many might say is the bigger and unfortunately more tragic story also involving Roswell police this week and last. Long and short, though, Police Chief Phil Smith has said that the shooting of a Roswell man wielding a shotgun was, quote, a textbook case of police exercising appropriate force, unquote, and that body cam videos from several officers, quote, supports the actions taken by police, unquote. A relative or witness, has said that the police did not have to shoot the man, however. So that is in dispute still, but Chief Smith notes that the suspect was warned 47 times to drop the shotgun before finally being fired upon. Now get this, follow-up articles have revealed that this may have been a case of what's known as suicide by cop, meaning that the man wanted to die. And against the pleadings of police and his friend to drop the shotgun, he continued goading them to come and get it in a 22-minute standoff that is on video on the Daily Record's website and the articles that I'm referencing here. The national newspaper, The Washington Post, however, it turns out, is not so readily buying that the use of deadly force was in fact needed here. And, also according to the Roswell Daily Record, has contacted the Roswell PD wanting the name, the race, and the records of the officer who made the fatal shot, plus lots more information detailed in that article. But Police Chief Phil Smith is not releasing that information, at least not yet. And I quote, citing concerns for the officer's safety. Controversial, yes. Tragic, definitely. And the right or the wrongness of the situation is still being debated and under investigation, both locally and nationally now, as it should be. I do have links posted either directly from www.area51.fm and or Area 51's Facebook page. This has been going on for a week now. Or you can visit rdrnews.com and click through local news to read these multiple articles for yourself. And I'm a little hesitant to say even, but yes, you can watch the entire 22-minute standoff from now several police body cam videos. More were made available just today on the Record's website. Ooh, let's take a break, and then I return with Nick Redfern on why he no longer believes modern UFOs are being piloted by extraterrestrials. And then we'll have a trip down memory lane with my old friend and colleague, Dr. Michael Heiser. Folks, you don't have to be a doomsday prepper to know that you need to get your hands on some silver, right? Whether you believe that our economy is destined to crash and burn soon, Or maybe you just know that in an emergency situation where maybe the power grid is down or food trucks aren't going to be coming to town anytime soon, you might need some precious metals to barter with your neighbor for food, water, or even bullets, because nobody's accepting credit cards or your printed fiat currency at the moment. So you need some silver to get by for a little while, right? Well, I have indeed personally bought some silver online in my day. And let me tell you about a starter pack I personally bought online recently to check this company out. I was really wowed by their product, their service, and their philosophies, really. Right now at Area51.fm, you'll see a link to this starter pack of silver from Money Metals, where for around $70-$80, you'll get not just 4 ounces of 999 pure silver, but a great variety. With their starter pack, I got one American Silver Eagle, one Canadian Maple, and a 1 ounce round, which are cool, but for trade or barter during an emergency, we all know you'll want some smaller pieces. The 4th ounce in this starter kit consists of a 1/2 ounce round plus 5, count them 5, 1/10 ounce pieces of pure silver that are usually hard to find in small quantities, plus the premium's usually pretty high on them. But hey, I don't want you to break the bank on a $1,000 purchase with a company you don't know anything about yet, but from personal experience, I can tell you that I trust Money Metals Exchange to deliver a safe, sound, and wow experience to you, just like they did for me. They run great sales on these 1/10 ounce pieces from time to time. The $2 or $3 you spend on them now, you might trade for bullets or water tomorrow. Go to area51.fm and click on the link to discover why Money Metals Exchange was recently rated Precious Metals Dealer of the Year by Bullion Insider. Earlier this week, a fellow I've met many, many times and seen at lots of UFO conferences across the country, usually as a speaker, the very prolific author Nick Redfern published an article on the blog MysteriousUniverse.org stating his belief that UFOs and what society calls aliens is probably not actually extraterrestrial, at least in the sense that when we say aliens or ETs today, we generally mean genuine biological entities with mortal lifespans native to other planets who have traveled here in nuts and bolt craft from those far, far away star systems. Now, this is interesting in that, one, Nick is extremely well known in UFO circles for his many books and public appearances. If you haven't seen him speak, you possibly have seen him on any one of many History Channel or other network specials on UFOs and aliens. But number two, because Nick didn't start out with this view, he says, he used to believe that UFOs were in fact from other planets. According to one online bio, Nick's main area of research centers around determining what has been learned about the UFO subject at an official level in Britain. He has spent hundreds of hours at the Public Record Office in London and has uncovered thousands of pages of previously classified Royal Air Force, Air Ministry, and Ministry of Defense files on UFOs dating from the Second World War. Nick is the author of several best-selling books on UFOs, including The FBI Files, The FBI's UFO Top Secrets Exposed, Cosmic Crashes, The Incredible Story of the UFOs That Fell to Earth, The NASA Conspiracies, The Real Men in Black, Close Encounters of the Fatal Kind, Covert Agenda, The British Government's UFO Secrets Exposed, and Contactees, A History of Human-Alien Interaction. I could go on, really, but I'm way short on time. The point is that I've posted his new article from Mysterious Universe on the Area51.fm Facebook page for you to check out for yourself, and Nick has agreed to come on the phone for a few minutes in order to tell us why his view on aliens has moved from one pole to the other over his almost four decades now of research.
Hello?
Hey, Nick, it's Guy.
Oh, hey, Guy, how's it going?
Very well. Thanks for joining us today here.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Yeah, I've been doing a podcast for about a month now in Roswell, Area51.fm. I know I saw you just a few months ago before I got it started here in New Mexico.
Oh, cool.
Well, you know, we set this up. What got my attention and I wanted to reach out and ask a couple questions is what you just published this article that more or less, I'm quoting you, your views on UFOs and aliens have, quote, radically changed over the years, right?
Yeah, well, I think it's like a lot of people. You get into the subject as a kid, and things are sort of very much black and white in the sense that UFOs are nuts and bolts craft. They're coming from this star system or that star system or this planet. Back engineering's going on, etc., etc. But I guess certainly as, you know, I sort of got to my sort of late 20s, early 30s, my views began to change quite significantly. Even as a young kid, when I first got into the subject, when I was about 13 or 14, something like that, I was a big fan of the writings of John Keel. And Keel, for the sort of mainstream UFO research community, was a bit of a like a pariah almost. And because he actually sort of postulated the idea that multiple strange phenomena that we see on our planet, whether of a ufological type or a cryptozoological type, that they were all part and parcel of something else that kind of masqueraded or manifested in different ways and for different cultures over numerous millennia, if you like. And over time, I began to sort of share Keel's views because, you know, I would see reports where UFOs were seen in the vicinity of Bigfoot sightings and vice versa. And
yeah.
There would be sort of paranormal and occult overtones to some UFO cases. So, for me, this takes it sort of far beyond just the issue of nuts and bolts UFOs. And so that's really what sort of put me on the path of not denying the extraterrestrial angle, but the more I dug into it, the more I continue to dig into it, the more I find that there's something going on that I think is far, far stranger than just somebody else's equivalent of NASA coming here.
Right. You said, just reading your article, and you kind of mentioned it already, that when you were in your 20s, you had the nuts and bolts alien UFO view. And I did want to ask before moving past that is, would you have said in your late 20s that opinion that you had, was that actually a research-based opinion, or was it just more influenced by the popular culture that we're all thrown at us as we grow up?
Well, that's a good question. It's probably a bit of both, and I'll tell you for why I say it's a bit of both, is because certainly, you know, I was widely read on the subject, by that age.
I apologize. Did you have an official position in Britain back at the time, or mainly as an author, researcher, journalist?
No, I was just somebody who was interested in UFOs and decided to write about it.
Okay.
So
that is what I believe. I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, and I read a lot of books and magazine articles on the subject throughout my 20s and, you know, sort of formulated an opinion. But I guess one of the reasons why I focused on the ET angle was probably because I used to file a lot of Freedom of Information requests both to the United States and to the US and also to a few other countries like Canada and Australia as well. And a lot of the reports, you know, when they came back, and there were some interesting stories from pilots and radar operators, that kind of thing, it kind of did instill, I guess, for me, more of like an ET-based type phenomenon, because a lot of these documents, they were credible, but they were also very, I guess, sort of bureaucratic and to the point, you know, so there was no speculation. It was kind of like, you know, Pilot Smith saw a strange object in the sky. And I think subconsciously or unconsciously, that does sort of instill the idea of a spacecraft, you know. But it was when you actually speak to the witnesses and then you find these sort of little issues that crop up that, like I said, you can find parallels with, you know, occult phenomena in some of these stories. I began to realize that it was more or less, whichever way you want to look at it, than just a nuts and bolts UFOs. It was something else. And And then I began to sort of look more into the issue of the encounters themselves. And one of the things I pointed out in the article you mentioned were these endless reports of aliens being seen taking soil samples. They've been able to travel, we're told, or we assume, from countless light years, and they come to the Earth, you know, they've got all this advanced technology, and yet time and time again, they cannot just steal a few plants or flowers or whatever, or soil samples, without being caught in the act. And to me, having looked at these cases, and there are literally dozens and dozens of them, to me, it comes across like they're stage managed. It's like a piece of theatre designed for not to actually collect soil samples, but it's for the benefit, if that's the right word, but for the benefit of the witness. And I think it's to sort of instill like an extraterrestrial meme. It sort of presents that imagery. Now, the big question is, what is the real phenomenon and why is it doing this? Why does it want to impress upon us that it's extraterrestrial? Why is it sort of deceiving us when it may have another point of origin? You know, those are the important questions that are sort of provoked by this stage-managed sort of theatre productions that we seem to endlessly find the witnesses are involved in.
Nice. You also, in fact, mentioned the point of origin or where they come from, as reported by contactees that claim to have had interactions or conversations with them. You made a big point that for some reason you thought the point of origin, they were almost too keen to reveal that, or what did you mean by that?
Well, it's like, you know, whether it's with the Space Brothers back in the 50s or the Betty and Barney Hill case in 1961 or the latter-day abduction stories, these entities seem very, very keen and quick to offer locations from where they come from. You know, back in the 50s, the Space Brothers would tell people we're from Mars or from Venus, etc., etc. In the 80s, or excuse me, the 60s onwards of the Betty and Barney Hill case, you know, that was tied to Zeta Reticuli. Then, you know, other people have talked about aliens from the Pleiades, and since then, you know, with the abduction phenomenon, we've got multiple places and locations given to the witnesses. Now, it could be they're telling the literal truth. But, on the other hand, I do think when you look at a lot of these cases, they seem to want to impress upon people that they're extraterrestrials, you know, rather than have us just assume it. And in an abduction case, if it's a cold and clinical scientific experiment or procedure to remove ova, sperm, DNA, etc., why even bother telling us? You know, it's kind of like if we sedate a grizzly bear and take some, you know, some samples from it. You don't try and explain to the bear who you are or what you're doing or where you're from, which city you're from. That would be absurd. So why do they feel, if it's just a cold and clinical experiment, as I said, why even bother telling us that they're extraterrestrials? But they seem to want to do that. They seem to impress that upon us.
And that's just suspicious, like, I guess, in the sense of if the universe is truly teeming with life and they're truly coming here from all these multiple points of origin, it would just sort of make sense that, well, the universe is a huge place. But you're saying that they kind of go out of their way a little too much, and it just makes you suspicious to reveal where they're from?
Yeah, it's kind of like somebody overemphasizing something to the point where you actually realize that they're saying something quite different to what they actually believe, you know. You know, where somebody has an issue with somebody else, or, you know, and they kind of feel the need to sort of keep emphasizing something. You have to think, well, why are you constantly emphasizing it? You know, there's clearly an agenda at work. And I think when you put that sort of overemphasizing issue together and tie it in with what I think are a lot of sort of clearly stage-managed events, like I said, like theatre productions almost, I think we then have to sort of address the issue of why are they doing it? You know, what is the need to create this charade of extraterrestrials if they're not extraterrestrials? You know, if they are, then all well and good. If they're not, then there has to be some sort of deception going on. Now, of course, deception can be, viewed as a controversial word. You know, I mean, does it mean something negative? Does it mean something positive? Are they deceiving us because they have a malicious agenda, or are they deceiving us because they simply don't want us to find out who or what they really are? You know, you can look at it both ways. And I don't think, there's enough sort of solid material in hand right now, at least, where we can sort of say for sure one way or the other.
So you've got, if they're not aliens in the biological travel across the galaxy
yeah.
sense, in your research, many, many books, and, I know a fair amount of your work very well, what probabilities or what possibilities, have you arrived at, at least has to be on the table for researchers and interested parties to examine or look at?
Well, yeah, sure. Well, I mean, you'd have, for example, the interdimensional theory.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of one that people like Keel were sort of very keen on, the idea that something that coexists with us and flits in and out of our reality. Now, terms like interdimensional are sort of thrown around in very sort of simplistic fashion, but, things today like quantum physics are allowing for the existence of multiple dimensions. But again, that sort of opens the door, but that sort of brings to mind the question, if they are interdimensional, then exactly what are they? Just like you're saying, they're coming from another dimension. Does that mean they're flesh and blood? Does it mean they're some energy type, energy-based type of entity? Then we have the theories, that Mac Tonis didn't so much come up with, but sort of upgraded for the modern era, the whole crypto-terrestrial angle of an ancient humanoid race from right here on Earth that sort of lives alongside us in stealth and that might today be on a decline and so they're moving amongst us, fearful that we're going to destroy the world, because if we destroy our planet, well, it's their planet as well, even if we don't realize that. And so they potentially move amongst us and use the UFO angle as a camouflage so we don't find out who or what they really are. Then you've got sort of the highly controversial theories like, time travelers, that they present themselves as extraterrestrial. So we don't find out what they really are, and then if we do find out, we risk sort of manipulating or affecting the timelines, that kind of thing, which is admittedly more along the lines of, like a classic science fiction story. But, if time travel's feasible, who knows what the outcome might be. And then, of course, you have, I mentioned earlier when we were just talking about the sort of occult and paranormal and supernatural overtones, which has sort of given rise to quite a popular theory that I actually wrote a book on, the idea of like a demonic deception. The idea of something that is literally demonic, and I think that actually could tie in with the idea of the interdimensional angle. I sometimes wonder when people talk about having demonic attacks and, there's some presence in the home or something along those lines, where could they actually come from? Well, perhaps, it sounds a bit controversial, but, for people who would adhere to the idea of like an afterlife and a realm, whether heaven or hell or, some other, and other religions, have other names and titles for these places, but they all kind of have like a heaven and hell type imagery to them. So, I guess you could make an argument that that's how the ancients described another dimension, another realm of existence. Heaven and hell could actually be something that scientifically could be explained as another dimension that could potentially allow these things to get into our world and manipulate us and our belief systems. So, I think there's multiple scenarios that could explain things, and I think personally, I don't think it's a case that there are multiple answers. I think it's likely that there's just one scenario for the truly unexplained aspect of the UFO phenomenon. If you get rid of the hoaxes, misidentifications of classified military aircraft, I think the genuinely unknown ones where we see this masquerading and deception going on, I don't think it's like time travelers and interdimensional and crypto-terrestrials. I think if we ever get to the base of it all, we'll find that it's one thing that's, you know, carrying all this out.
Well, thank you for, wow, you unpacked a whole lot of information for not even a 15-minute phone call, I bet. And I will point to, right now, the article I'm quoting you from or referencing is mysteriousuniverse.org. And, again, we'll list a bunch of your books in that bio I did. Is there any way to wrap up or anything else you want to just mention that you're working on lately or anywhere you'll be if people want to find out about you, or just go to your website?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, if people want to see me lecture, I'll be speaking next month on the weekend of the 14th and the 15th of May at the Paradigm Symposium in Minneapolis. And then the first weekend in June, Friday the 3rd to Sunday the 5th, I'll be speaking at the Contact in the Desert conference at Joshua Tree in California.
Well, good. I don't think I'll see you at either of those, but I look forward to seeing you either back here in Roswell or when I am out and about traveling. You're at almost every.
All right.
You're a wonderfully invited speaker at almost every UFO conference I've ever been to. Thank you so much for just investing a little time in what we're doing here today, sir.
Well, thanks a lot, Guy. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Coming up in about 60 seconds, Dr. Michael Heiser, PhD, academic editor for Logos Bible Software, is going to come up and share a story with us how he got booted off History Channel's special UFOs in the Bible years ago. But first, I got a quick riddle for you. What do a British secular UFO and alien abduction researcher and an Ivy League PhD theologian have in common? They both believe the exact same thing about what really happened in Roswell, 1947. So do I. We're going to hear more from Dr. Heiser after this.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. It's Guy again. Bless you.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. Don't want to take up a lot of your time. Thanks for doing this from your work. If you will, I've reposted that article. It was good to see it kind of showed up. My experience, I found out, is not directly linked to my website either. You got me thinking. But in just a couple moments, I will link to the article and people can read the detailed version. Do you want to recap what was your experience with the History Channel's UFOs in the Bible documentary from last decade?
Yeah, well, it began by, you know, with an email that asked me if I wanted to be in a show initially titled UFOs and the Bible.
Right.
So, you know, so I was fine, you know, with that. I figured, why not? I mean, I was kind of naive. I'd never done any TV. This is shortly after I had done The Facade and a few talk shows. So I thought it'd be fun. But then a few days, well, maybe a week or so before I was supposed to fly out to Los Angeles where they were going to film this, I get this email with a list of questions, and I can tell by the questions, you know, what the answers they want are. So I more or less just contacted them again and said, hey, you know, I hope, you know, you didn't waste the money on the ticket, but I'm just not going to be able to answer any of these questions the way I know you want me to answer, because I just, the way they're worded, I can tell. And they said, oh, that's no problem. You know, we want all views and all perspectives. And I said, are you sure? Yeah, come on out. And so I did. And we filmed for 2 hours. And, you know, then I had to, of course, sign the release form and all that. But, you know, again, I was naive. I didn't really know how this worked, for lack of a better way to put it. But, you know, they say, well, a year from now, you know, the show will be ready to go and we'll send you an email and you can watch it. And okay, it sounds like fun. Well, you know, okay, a year later I get the email and go to watch. And I'm not even in the show. Okay, but that was a blessing because it turned out I didn't give them anything in 2 hours that they could sufficiently distort to make me sound out or sound like I was affirming, you know, the ancient alien view and, you know, things like that. I know other people who were recorded for the show, you know, were pretty upset with the results. You know, like Hugh Ross, you know, they made him, you know, sound like he was really entertaining seriously the possibility that the angels at the Sodom and Gomorrah story were extraterrestrials and all that. And so it was kind of a fiasco. And you, of course, you know, had the evidence. You had the smoking gun because you had the audio tape, which you had transcribed, and you know, you could see how they spliced, you know, one part of the conversation into another. You know, how they skipped, you know, material, you know, that would give what you said context. It was just a hack job. So I have since been asked probably 4 or 5 times, maybe half a dozen, to be on different shows. I've been asked by Ancient Aliens to be on their show 2 or 3 times. And what I do is I typically send them an email that says something like, "Hey, thanks for the invitation. I'd love to be on your show, but what I need is I need a promise in writing from you that you won't do this to me." And then I send them the link, and that usually just kills the kills the request right there.
They
so, I mean,
follow up.
Well, I mean, so, I've gotten a few. I mean, the way this works, you know, is the History Channel will contract studios. In this case, it was Weller Grossman Studios. I don't even know if it exists anymore. But they contract studios to go take this footage, and then you know they'll give it to the History Channel and whatnot. So I actually have had follow-ups where people are like, you know, "Where this is appalling. You know, what they did was just terrible. It's unprofessional. You know, we're not going to do this." But I just tell them, "Look, I know it just kind of ruins the whole thing. But in view of my experience and the experience of others, I don't consider television trustworthy. So if you can't give me this in writing, and I understand, you know, that that's not the norm, I'm just not going to do it." I mean, I don't have this burning ambition to be on TV. I mean, some people just love to watch themselves on TV. I don't care. So I'm not losing anything.
May I ask if you can recall? I know it's a very old article and experience. Just give one example of what type of question or questions did they ask? What was your answer, and why you feel that it wouldn't have wound up in their original program? And folks, this program predates the series Ancient Aliens. This was a year or 5, even maybe 2, 3 before that program came out. So
this program we're
talking about is more or less might even be considered the pilot or test run audience reaction of the History Channel investigating the UFO phenomena, especially from an ancient perspective. Go on. What were they asking?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's a good characterization. It was sort of a pilot. I mean, when it aired, they changed the title to UFOs in the Bible.
Right.
Which tells you something. That alone tells you something. But, I mean, they would. The questions would be worded things like, you know, when the UFO landed in front of Ezekiel, you know, what do you think he thought? Well, I don't accept the premise of the question, you know. So there would be things like that the way the question was worded is they were inserting a premise, or they were tailoring the question so that unless I was crass enough to say, "Well, that's a crappy question, I just don't agree with it," which I would have said and did in a couple places, which again, that's part of the reason I wound up not being in the show. But when they word it in a certain way, you can tell that they want the person they're interviewing to go off on a certain trajectory, and in so doing, implicitly or explicitly affirming the premise that they planted in the question. So it just wasn't workable, you know, because I was going to tell them actually what I thought, and not really give them ammunition for what they wanted to produce.
Right. So I remember you had said the producer, the production company, was Weller Grossman. After you and I blogged and had, you know, the company actually called me, and I will say, and not so much in their defense, but it should be stated for the record, they told me that the producer, Gabe Vanderbilt, Gabe, no longer worked there, gone back to work
for
his dad. They couldn't distance themselves far enough, I guess, but, you know, they sold the production. Okay, so that blog, really your detailed account from over a decade ago of how the History Channel flew you in, filmed you for 2 hours, you're the only, you mentioned you're the only credentialed scholar. Is that how you phrased it, with Bible degree?
Yeah, I was supposed to be the only, I think, and as I recall, I was the only guy with biblical studies, you know, degrees that they interviewed.
And is known in the UFO field from Art Bell and your book, The Facade. Yeah, so you're a credentialed scholar with biblical degrees on a History Channel, precursor to Ancient Aliens, and your answers were so far against their premise. I believe
it's so undesirable
that they cut you entirely. Well,
yeah. I mean, and I get this. You know, when I get invitations now, they, you know, again, it's just that. It kind of just poisoned the well, you know, because I'll get invitations now, and they'll say things like, "Hey, look, you know, we're looking around, and your degrees are real. They're from University of Wisconsin. We've checked you out. You're into this stuff. You know, we've listened to some interviews on radio. You know, you'd be great for the show." And okay, I assume all that's sincere and whatnot, but it, like I said, it's just poisoned the well. I hate to say it, but I don't have any reason, since I don't know you, I don't have any reason to trust you, you know, because this is the way it's done. I mean, and then you have, like, the History Channel, the writers for the show a few years ago, they, you know, they made headlines, I guess, maybe on the Huffington Post or a site like that. I'd have to go look at my blog because I blogged it, but the writers are basically saying, this is just all nonsense. We make up a lot of crap, you know, and then we do an episode, you know, But, you know, so when you see stuff like that come out, and again, in light of my own experience, I, as harsh as it sounds, I don't have a reason to trust you. I mean, it would be fun to do. I don't mind being on TV. I don't really care. I mean, I was asked one time to be on, we got something in email about my wife and I being on one of those wife swap shows, and the premise was, the premise was to pair me with, or I guess to pair us both with UFO believers, like enthusiasts, you know, and that kind of thing. It's like, and my kids are like, yeah, you need to do this. And it's like, you just have no idea. This is the last thing in the world I want to do. You
so
know,
we put it
just,
to a family vote. And
yeah, and I won. You know, my wife didn't want to do it either, but the kids were like, "Oh, it's TV. You know, it's their generation. That's their thing." And it's like, you don't understand this. You know, if they're gonna edit this to make it sound like the other side's winning points here, or comes up with something convincing that I can't, and none of that's gonna be true. None of it's gonna be real.
Right.
So just no way. There's just no way I'm doing this.
Would you think, final question before I ask you about what's happening with you currently, your newest books, other than The Facade and The Portent, but would you say that this same editorial style is still happening on the more modern Ancient Aliens program, just as an educated guess that people are devouring for multiple seasons nowadays?
I think that they are more prone to not have critical voices in the show. So,
well said.
You know, they're... They have a thing, you know, they've got a template now. It's successful in terms of dollars, you know, the views they get, and then they generate advertising revenue and whatnot. They don't have any reason to want dissenting voices. So I think in that respect it's changed, at least on the surface. But even the reality of a dissenting voice didn't get much play in again, what you referred to as the pilot. I think that's a good way to characterize the episode or the show we're talking about. It was, in many ways, a first step for them. But right now, you know, I think they have their good thing in their view, and they're going to run with it.
Yeah, you're saying they learned, especially from the backlash of your article and such, that they just only invite
no
people
point.
On there now that only affirm their premise anyways. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
go on, I apologize.
No, I was going to say, I think that they, it's just, it requires less effort, you know, on their half, and they don't have to fiddle with stuff, and they know what they want to produce, and then they're going to go after the people that will give them what they want.
Nice. Well, Mike, as my listeners may or may not know, you're author of The Facade and The Portent. Both are novels based on accurate historical texts, machinery, and public figures. But more recently, you've done some other work with your company, Logos Bible Software, on the unseen realm, supernatural. You want to talk about that for
yeah.
1 minute?
Yeah, we decided to, the company decided to go into print publishing 3 or 4 years ago. And so last September, I published a book through them. It's Lexham Press is our print imprint. And it's done really well. I mean, I think we're pushing 20,000 units now, and we're deliberately not in stores. This is all you can get it in hard copy through Amazon, but it's Amazon and other digital formats. And people can go up and look at Amazon, just Unseen Realm, of course, and put my last name in there, H-E-I-S-E-R. And I've got, as of today, a little over 170 reviews. And 86% of them are 5-star. I mean, it's been really received well. The thing that I like to hear most from reviews is that, hey, this is an academic book, but it's actually readable. You know, it doesn't read like a textbook. You know, and that was, again, that's what we were shooting for. But
well,
it's all about.
About. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do in Unseen Realm is, I'm going from Genesis to Revelation, describing the sort of the epic narrative of the biblical story, you know, the biblical theological narrative, because it is a story. It's in a story form, and so I'm trying to go through that narrative, but in a very deliberate way. We have been trained as modern people, and especially modern Christians, and this is why, you know, I thought the book would be quite controversial, and you know it has been. I mean, I've taken some shots for it, and I'll continue to do that. But we've been trained to think that the right context for interpreting the Bible is the history of Christianity, and that is just false. It's not. The right context for interpreting the Bible is not the Catholic Church. It's not Protestantism. It's not the Puritans. It's not modern evangelicalism. It's none of these things. All of these contexts are, pardon the pun, alien to the Bible, because they all post-date the biblical period by centuries, and in some cases a couple millennia, thousands of years.
Whoa,
so
I
it doesn't make any sense. Go
ahead. I have 1 minute left on this
sure.
format. What is the
right.
Bible the story of?
So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to give people a sense that you, to correctly read the Bible, you need the Israelite in your head. You need the ancient worldview. And that worldview was very predisposed to believing in an animate, supernatural world that we as moderns reject, even Christians reject it. You know, I'm happy with God and angels and maybe Satan and I'm done now. A lot more to it than that. So it's the story of God, you know, how heaven and earth intersects, God's original plan to blend his human family with his divine family, you know, the host of heaven, and how that was intentionally drawn up, how it got ruined through a series of divine rebellions, plural, and human rebellions, plural, and how, you know, God is trying to restore that original Edenic worldview, that Edenic plan.
Okay, The Unseen Realm, look for it on Amazon, just type in H-E-I-S-E-R. Anytime you want to come back and unpack that further or just any topic, you have Richard Hoagland status on this program.
I get to be annoying within regular intervals.
A great phrase I learned from you years back with your work on Coast to Coast with Art Bell and George Dory. So you have even Richard Hoagland does not have Mike Kaiser status on Area 51. Say hi.
All right, well, thanks a lot.
And the whole family. God bless you. Great talking to you.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, bye-bye.
Folks, my hour has flown by tonight. As I go, I wanted to let you know that you can view for free several lectures from Dr. Heiser, speaking here in Roswell over many years of joining us for Roswell UFO festivals and conferences, as well as Nick Redfern's talk he did here on Body Snatchers, the horrible truth at the heart of the Roswell incident. Where can you see all this for free? AlienResistance.org has a huge collection of DVDs filmed here in sunny Roswell, and all of our videos are posted online for free viewing. AlienResistance.org, Orthodox Perspectives on Unorthodox Topics. You'll find it all linked from Area51.fm. There are lots of news stories I just didn't get to tonight, but Area51.fm's Facebook page is loaded up this week with many more fascinating articles than I was able to cover tonight. Darn it. God willing, I'll be back next week keeping you informed with all the news that's fit for your government to retract, to deny, to cover up, as well as tell you what's what and what's going on right here in beautiful, sunny Roswell, New Mexico. Y'all come see us now, you hear?
I've played with feet before.
You know you have a baby.
Yeah.
I love feet.
You know I like you.
You know.